A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, to get 30, to get 20, 20, 20, to get 20, 20, to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
This is the Entitled Banter podcast. I'm Scott Tilford, joined by Jules Gill.
Oh, that was very professional, right?
It's powerful.
There.
It's confident. It's a statement of intent. Usually, every week we hit the recording button, and a little Zoom lady likes to tell us that a meeting is in progress. But I said no, Jules Gill. I'm gonna do an actual introduction.
No, what you've done here is you've opened up a big tin of juicy beef and you just squirted it right in my face. So I'm ready for that big slab of content. Let's go.
That would put you down a big slab of juicy beef. You'd have to wipe all that off before you could continue, I think.
I think it might ruin your day.
Am I
just out there and saying that meat juice or bean juice in general is like the worst thing in the world?
Bean juice is bad too.
Bean juice is just tomato juice. Tomato juice, what am I about? Tomato sauce, isn't it?
You wouldn't just like drink it though, like unwanted bean. Any juice that's gone cold, I think.
Sorry. You are saying to me right now that you would not drink beans.
Come on, man.
Don't dirty yourself.
I guess I would drink bean juice if it was. I'm going to have to put a rule down. I think that any juice that didn't start cold cannot be left to go cold and then be drinkable. That's my rule.
So you'd be happy.
Cold bean juice? No.
Okay, I can get behind that. A lukewarm bean juice is probably where I draw the line as well. Because, I mean, I think that you and I in a past life were the same old man. I feel like you and I would be looking over like a seafront, looking at a seagull, eating a chip, while we were sipping our Bovril sort of thing. We like a meaty drink, you know what I'm saying?
Well, you know the bit in Alan Partridge when he goes to visit Michael, and then Michael's like, do you want a cup of beans? And he's like, what do you mean? And he's like, here's a cup of beans. And he gives him a sausage to scoop the beans out. I thought that was genius, and I've never actually made that, but I love the idea of a cup of beans with a sausage to scoop the beans out. Like that's brilliant. But anyway, Untitled Banter podcast. I'm Scott Tilford, joined by Jules Gill. And every week we ask for different questions, different thoughts, whatever you'd like us to talk about each and every week. And a massive response to this, thanks to everybody for sending in their questions. And we'll try and get to as many as possible. A nice little positive thing as well, a little comment from Jay, who says, genuinely one of the best podcasts out there and a great way to start the weekend. Well, thank you very much.
What a lovely thing. Very nice. That's
very an actual... I know, an actual question from Casey J. McGeorge, who says, UBP, 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 love you guys from across the pond. What are your thoughts on this whole abandoned thing? Personally, I have no interest in it, and to me, it seems as if the studio can't be trusted. Keep up the great work. Also, from Travis Nichols, kind of feel like we were abandoned on purpose. My inner Charlie Day conspiracy mind is exploding. Now, have you been following all this abandoned stuff, and what do you think about it?
I have been following it vicariously through the thumbnails that you, Scott Telford, have been making, because I find that's how all of my news should be delivered to me, in thumbnail form as made by Scott.
You just follow the arrows, you know.
That's the thing, like, I don't know where to look. Oh, look, there's a circle or a giant yellow arrow there with a guy going, what?
Sort of is it that thing? Is it this thing?
Why don't you fill me in on this? Because I can give you the cliff notes of what I think is going on.
You do that first, then I'll tell you what an absolute weird half-baked tire fire it's turned into.
So we were suggesting that it was PT under a different name. Silent Hills got cancelled. Hideo Kojima got booted out the door by Konami. He decided to take the ideas, go with somebody else, And that's what Abandoned.
Well, so the thing, well, that's the thing, the name Abandoned, or is it all the Konami? Is it Castlevania? Like, there's all these different things. And the reason that it kicked off, it wasn't just us. We sort of leapt on because it is a really fun talking point. But the reason it kicked off was because Blue Box Studios, who are the developers of Abandoned, and Abandoned itself, when it got shown off, was a first-person horror game. They then tweeted saying, oh, the real name of our game begins with S and ends with L, which everybody went, oh, it's probably Silent Hill then. And then if you translate...
Snail.
If you translate the dude's name, the creative director, he's called Hasan Karaman. If you translate Karaman in from Turkish into Japanese, it's Kojima. So a lot of people went, oh my god, it must be that. And then it led to all these other crazy theories involving the font on the website was Antonio, and there's a street in Antonio, Texas called Silent Hill. There's all these sort of things that led people down this route.
I love it when the internet deep dives on this sort of stuff.
Same. It's been really, really fun. And so the whole thing was that the game would be revealed in an in-game app, which a lot of people went, well, why are they doing an in-game app? You actually download an app off the PlayStation Store and you sit there with your controller and it's whatever it is, it'll be revealed at a certain time and we're all going to play whatever this reveal is. So it was all very weird, and no game's ever done that before either. So it was like, well, okay, Sony must be on board with this. And Kojima, Sony, no one's denied this either. No one said it's not us. And Blue Box got out there and tweeted saying we're not associated with Kojima, which is what Kojima would say. So that was another thing that threw everybody off. Cut to August 10th, I think it was, last week or whatever, earlier this week, whenever it was, 8 o'clock p.m. UK time, when we're all logged into the app, and nothing happened. And then nothing continued to happen for half an hour, for an hour, for 2 hours, for 10 hours, for a day, to this point where nothing has happened at all. And so the so right now, Blue Box Studios and Hasan Karaman have tweeted saying, and they said this on the night after a couple of hours had passed, just saying, oh, got a bit of a glitch, lads, and we're fixing it. Don't worry, we'll be there ASAP. And we're not going to give you a new date or a new time. We're just going to get there. It'll get there eventually. And please wish us luck with it. So that's where we're at on it. But it's completely nothing happened. It was a whole big, oh my God, could it be this? And then it's nothing at all.
Well, call this situation a detective from the Wire TV show, because this is absolute bunk. This is big, hefty amounts of bunk. I can actually totally believe that Hideo Kojima is just there like...
The thing that I forgot with him is that he wore that fake head back in 2014, 2015.
Hideo Kojima in a fake head, mate.
He did a whole press junket where, and he's done this twice before. He's invented two fake studios before. There was there was Moby Dick Studios for Metal, before it was Metal Gear Solid 5, before it was Kojima Productions. Right. And there was 1180 Studios for what became PT, what became Silent Hills. Right. And when he was demoing as Moby Dick Studios head, I forget what fake name he made up. It was an anagram of Kojima. It was just like Makajo.
Was it?
It might as well have been Hawk Coleman, Shoot Gunner, and he was doing the rounds with a fake head on. He had a big fake plasticine head, well, just a fake, like Mission Impossible, fake head on. Amazing. And then he got to a GDC that year, and he took the mask off to reveal it was him, and he was like, it's me, guys, and no one reacted to it, because everybody in that audience hadn't been following all the stupid mad crap he'd been doing, but it's Kojima, so all this stuff leads to the fact that all of this could be the reveal of something, but I don't think it is anymore. I've followed it for a while, and I just think that if it was Sony and Kojima, they wouldn't have missed the date by this much. We're days late now. So it's just, I just don't feel like it's anything. But it does speak to the favor people have for Silent Hill for like something new.
I'm kind of annoyed, actually, if that is the case, that this other company has just basically just lampooned all of the interest of Silent Hill, applied to their potentially rubbish game if it's not going to make its own deadlines. And then when it comes out, it's only going to disappoint people, but they've benefited from a huge hype train of people spinning that story up and up and up and up.
They keep getting all these, every tweet that they do has like thousands of likes and stuff, but there is this undercurrent of people going like, well, if it's not Silent Hill, then raw. And I'm just like, well, it's not, at some point, I mean, the developer Hasan Karaman, Blue Box, they have chased it directly. Like, oh, the name of this is S and L. And
they've chased it, but they have also stated, like, from the point that they said we're not associated with Hideo Kojima, they've got that to fall back on. Then everyone else is now a fool if by them saying, we literally said we're not.
Well, there is that, but the thing is, after they said that tweet, inside the app, because it's been active, the app's been active in terms of you can log on and just see what's going on, just a black screen. But like a couple of times, an image did appear in the background. One image was literally of the PT starting room, the small room that you start in with the table and a door at the back. It was a very blurry version of that room.
If they are doing that and it doesn't turn out to be anything to do with it, that is incredibly...
Well, another thing is that they had one of the other images that appeared was of a man in an eye patch. And it was like, well, that's... And everyone went, oh, it's Big Boss. It's not Big Boss. If you're a Metal Gear fan, you'll know that only Big Boss... Oh, Big Boss's eye patch is on the other side to Solid Snake. And so it was actually... would have been Solid Snake.
But, I love that the speed in which you interrupted your own flow of thought there. It was just kind of like... It was like you had a dialogue with yourself, like the Gollum scene.
I watched...
It's Big Boss. It's not Big Boss. Actually, it's always... It's Big Boss.
Precious. I watched the internet react to it going, oh, it's Big Boss. It's not Big Boss because the eye patch is on the other side, lads. But
it is
Big Bollocks. Either way, Karaman was clearly picking that image because it invokes Metal Gear. It makes people think of Metal Gear Solid or Metal Gear in general. And people then realized that that image was a stock image from the Epic Game Store or something. And that's what was in the background. So he's definitely courting it. He's definitely going like, oh, could it be? And then whatever. But I think like I'm not ever going to be annoyed at a person for trying. I don't feel like Kojima has the monopoly on crazy viral ways to unlock to unveil your game. But at the same time, obviously, he's missed the timing window. So there is that side of it. But I kind of champion them for trying it as much as half-baked as it is.
I mean, just on a side note here, of the crazy sort of auteur directors for video games, I would like to see like a boxing match or at least some sort of like fight go down between Hideo Kojima, Suda51, Swery, you know, the guy from Deadly Premonition.
Yeah, of course.
And what's the name of the guy who does... Near Automata Potato Patata is Yoko Taro.
Yoko Taro,
I want to see all of them get into a room together and just absolutely scrap it out, mate.
Why is there not a celebrity death match for game developers? Why is that not a playable video game? How has that not been done? Like, there's so many. Phil Spencer could use like smooth talking to calm everybody down before he hits you with some price hike on the Seagate SD card.
Todd Howard could walk across the screen with like a screen clearing, like one hit kill thing, just going like, it works, and let all the code like goes mad around.
I would play the S out of like, I can't swear on this platform, but I would that would be so good. And you could add on, if anyone had like a boost in, like, you could have had like Akuma Nakamura or whoever when like she blew up around E3 and have her playable for like a few weeks or something. Just
instead of Super Smash Bros, you could call it like devastating dev battles or something like that, and literally just riff off the entire like UI of Smash.
I want to play as Jim Ryan, who does nothing at all. He only reminds you of the statistics. He doesn't play anything. He's got nothing to say, but he delivers the financials. Abandoned has been a hell of a thing, and at some point that app should kick into life, assumedly, but right now we're all just waiting for it to be something. Next question from McAllister NYC. NYC has says, hello friends, hope you're doing well. Curious to hear if you think that the Ubisoft open world Star Wars game is a good idea or a bad one. The thought of an Assassin's Creed Valhalla-like map with lightsabers fills me with dread. I'd prefer a less open world, more focused story, but hey, that's just me. What do you think of Ubisoft doing the Ubisoft treatment?
Sorry, just the way that you described a Star Wars meets all of the trappings of an Assassin's Creed game made my genitals go up inside me.
They've inverted like a crocodile.
I feel absolutely sick to my stomach at the thought of a live service game like that. Just be awful. Imagine that. Oh, climb the Wookiee Tower to go and spot the Endor base to attack or whatever. And just go
watch out for the AT-ATs.
Don't worry. You can use, instead of your eagle vision, you can use your two pipes vision.
Two pipes?
Mate, there's a character in Star Wars with two pipes. I was speaking to Ben Roy about this because he absolutely loves his Star Wars and he absolutely loves how like weird some of the naming conventions are. And it's like, imagine trying to like come up with like I'm a feared bounty hunter from across the galaxy and you choose two pipes for your name.
I mean, I remember there's some really good Easter eggs of names hidden in Star Wars. Like the guy that offers Anakin the Death Sticks in Episode 2, his real name is Sleaze Bagano, which is really good. And what was it? When the big lad in A New Hope, the sort of larger pilot who's flying the X-Wing, his name is Major Porkins, which is
because I remember that Porkins, they were like, Porkins, pull up. Like, imagine just living in like a literal world like that. What would mine be? I would just be like,
Baldo?
Wow. Went straight for that one, didn't you? Not much thought went into that. Jesus. How long have you had that loaded up? Greedo shot first. Scott Telford did.
There's a game coming out called Baldo, and I was going to send you the link and be like, oh, it's about you. And then I thought, oh, that's a bit harsh. I didn't do it. And then I did it on a podcast, but that's just, that's me and you, my friend. But yeah, there is a game called called Baldo. But in regards to Star Wars open world stuff, I wonder if there's a way to do it with live service stuff in regards to live events, like Fortnite style stuff, like having, you know, like, oh, there's a Sith guy on the loose and everybody needs to go here to fight him, or like Hitman live contract style stuff. I think that could be kind of cool, but I don't trust Ubisoft right now. So it's going to need a little bit of time before they...
I'm the only person that really doesn't want like an open world Star Wars game. I feel like we've already got the Knights of the Old Republic MMORPG, which kind of serves that for me. I don't feel like I want to have what would potentially be like a bland experience where all the towns and stuff feel the same in such a fantastical universe.
I mean, Jedi Fallen Order is so good as well.
Yeah, I want like sparse locales. I want it to be like level-based. Level-based stuff was brilliant when it's handled correctly, because you can build so much into the mythos of what it is. Like, one of the main reasons why I still go back to play Star Wars Battlefront 2, the EA version, is because of the fact that they just put so much like effort into making the levels feel so distinct and fun, like actual snapshots of the movie. If that was like a open world game, I don't know, I just wouldn't feel the same, would it?
It's weird because the last couple of nights I've just been living on KOTOR, like the 2003 one or whatever the original one
is. Yeah, it's
great, isn't it? Oh, God, my God, it's phenomenal. Young me did not appreciate that game anywhere near as much as it deserves. Like, that game is phenomenal. And just playing through that bit, that almost works as an open world Star Wars game. Like, you are free to just explore and talk to
whoever. They're big levels, though.
Yeah.
That's the thing. That's what I Shadow of Mordor felt to me. It wasn't classed as an open world game. It was like it was just a large level game. And for that reason, everything felt more compact in a sense that I didn't feel like I was seeing the same things repeat over and over again. It felt like each locale felt different. And as such, I felt a sense of progression when I moved between them. Whereas if it was just part of a bigger world, Biomutant had this big problem where like I went from one biome to the other, but nothing felt like it changed. It just felt like, cool, I'm over here now. Like,
I think it's like if you're spending the majority of your time just traveling, just sort of wandering to find the video game, then you bounce off it. Because there's a really good distinction to be made there about like the sort of open world mentality, but applied to a space that isn't just sparse and huge for the sake of it. Because the likes of like Breath of the Wild do it really well, where you're always coming across something, whether it's a puzzle dungeon or an enemy to fight or whatever. As opposed to, for me, Valhalla or the last three Assassin's Creeds, I finished Origins, but I didn't finish Odyssey or Valhalla because they are just so huge. You're just wandering around for ages.
They're huge, and then the developers seem to sort of panic and just fill every single possible nook and cranny with collectibles or little side missions, and there's nothing wrong with that whatsoever. The problem is that when they combine it with a very, very like patronizing UI and map mechanic where it tells you where every single thing is, you don't have to explore to do anything. You're literally going to place to tick boxes. You are in that essence taking what should be free choice, as in I'm going to go explore over here, and turning it into a mandatory, well, I better go and hoover up all of these things over here.
There's one thing that I kind of realized going back through BioWare's old games, like the first Mass Effect, the remake of it, and then playing back through the original KOTOR, is like, you can, like, it really feels like a super interactive world. You're not being waypointed to something in particular. Like, the quest is just find out where such and such is hidden, and you can just ask that question to anybody, and any number of different elements can interact with each other, and it feels like you're crafting that path. Like, it's you're carving your own way through it, and you lose that with waypointing.
This is why I still feel like Fallout New Vegas is one of the all-time ways to tell an open world story, because it gives you the vaguest clues as to where people have gone, but you have to actually find out where they are by talking to people. Like, the opening section in Good Springs, I know we're going off on a bit of a tangent, but there is a point to this.
Not like us, is it?
You don't have to actually go and ask people where Benny is heading, or who, like, the Khans that he was with, or like some other information about it. You can go back up to the grave where you were dug out by Victor and look on the ground and find distinguishing cigarette butts.
No
take
way.
Them to somebody else. It will come up in conversation saying, do you know anyone who smokes this brand of cigarettes? And they'll point you in the direction that you could go and find
That's brilliant. That's like that's the style of RPG storytelling, or RPG pathfinding, that I feel has completely gone by the wayside. Because even in Assassin's Creed, they try to do that. They try to like ape the Witcher, and you can turn it. It's an option in the menu. You can be like, oh, I don't want waypointing. I want exploration or something. Yeah. And then instead of telling you where to go, they'll just say, your target resides to the east of the river. And then you just go and go. But that's not really the same. Like, you're not empowering the player to figure it out. Like, the conversation options you have in KOTOR, the agency you have in Fallout, like, those, it gives you, like, a sense of, like, literal agency in that world. Like, I can ask these questions. I can figure this out.
Developers are fighting a constant battle between keeping players engaged and empowering them at every given opportunity, and they are living in perpetual fear that a person will not be able to understand the problem and therefore bounce off the game entirely and call it dumb or stupid, when in actual fact it's because it requires a bit more forethought than you might realize.
That's true. I mean, obviously,
I do feel for the developers a lot. because they have to try and make it as accessible as possible.
Especially as things have got more popular as well. Like, you have a much bigger mainstream audience. I forget who originally said the quote of, think of the average person. Okay, 50% of the population are less intelligent than them. Yeah. And it's like, that's like such an insane way to think about it, but you can apply it across the game. If you're making something for a wider audience, you need to make sure that that person can enjoy the game as well.
I mean, just my last point is, you take Fallout New Vegas and the example I just gave you, and Fallout 76, where it tells you exactly where every single goal is, every single person, when your character would feasibly have no idea where this person is. It just says, go find the Overseer, and it gives you an icon. It's like, how would my character know that the Overseer is in this direction, or even what they look like? You know what I mean? Like, it's dumb.
No, there's tons of stuff like that, especially because loads of games just boil it down to vision modes as well. It's just, you sort of like channel whatever vision mode, and the thing that glows red is what you're supposed to kill.
It's that time of the year. Your vacation is coming up. You can already hear the beach waves, feel the warm breeze, relax, and think about work. You really, really want it all to work out while you're away. Monday.com gives you and the team that peace of mind. When all work is on one platform and everyone's in sync, things just flow. Wherever you are, tap the banner to go to Monday.com.
One size fits all seemed like a good idea for clothes. Nice
dress. It's a t-shirt.
Until you tried it on. Same goes for your healthcare. That's why United Healthcare offers a variety of flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. So whether you're between jobs, coming off a parent's plan, or even missed open enrollment, you can find the plan that fits you best. Find out more about United Healthcare coverage at uh1.com. That's uh1.com.
Before we go any further, I want to talk to you about today's sponsor, Masterclass. With the amount of time we spend discussing and analyzing video games on this channel, it's always good to understand exactly how these experiences are put together. And fortunately for me, I can do just that with Masterclass. With Masterclass's streaming service, you can learn from the best to become your best, studying and growing with over 200 plus of the world's leading instructors. For me, I've been having a blast using a class on video game design by The Sims creator Will Wright to find out exactly how game mechanics are designed around player psychology, as well as learning how important playtesting is to shipping the titles that you and I both love. But it hasn't stopped there, as I've also been brushing up on my practical filmmaking skills directly from my favourite movie director, Martin Scorsese, as well as trying to get back in the cooking game with Roy Choi's amazing course on intuitive cooking. Seriously, my kitchen is a mess, but my belly has never been more grateful. For just $10 a month, an annual membership with Masterclass gets you unlimited access to courses on your phone, computer, smart TV, or even via audio-only modes. Even better, every new membership comes with a 30-day money-back guarantee, and 88% of members feel that the service has made a positive impact on their lives. And to put the cherry on top of that cake, right now, What Culture Gaming listeners get an additional 15% off any annual membership at masterclass.com/gaming. That's 15% off at masterclass.com/gaming. What's that? You want it one more time? Well, that's the URL, masterclass.com/gaming. Right, now I'm going to watch Tony Hawk try to teach me how to ollie properly. I'll see you all soon.
Anyway, next question is from The Gaming Nook. How many hours a week do we spend gaming? Is it all your free time, or given that it's your job, do you get any paid time to play?
Oh, that's a good one. That one.
That is very good. For me, I probably manage roughly 3 sessions of 1.5 to 3 hours a week, but I'd love it to be a lot more. Have a great week. Same to you. We don't get paid to play. Unless it's sometimes when it's something sponsored, we might be able to fit in like a half hour or something at the end of a day to try and catch some footage for a sponsored video. But even then, that's very rare. How many hours do you spend a week gaming?
I have to admit, I am playing less and less video games as I'm going on. I'm streaming at least 2 hours a week, so I get to play that as a mandatory thing. But in between, like, just because I do lots of like Warhammer stuff as well, which requires a lot of assembly and painting, a lot of my time is taken up by that, researching rules for it. And then I'm obviously shooting and editing those things, so that's another like evening out. Then it's spending time with the missus, then it's doing work on the house. Like, it adds up to a lot of thing where I probably only play about I would say 3 hours a week at the moment. Okay. And while like it's not, it's nowhere near enough to be what I would consider to be like an active gamer at the moment, I still spend all of my free time researching other games that are out.
Yeah, you're still immersed in it, yeah.
Yeah, like I can't escape it in that sense because I'm always getting people on like the Discord talking to me about new titles that are coming up, sharing trailers and stuff like that.
Well, it's in such a weird spot right now because the industry has been so flat for the last few months, obviously because of the reality of what we've been through and the tail end of coming out of the lockdown and stuff. And there are so many games being delayed or like even in regards for the rest of this year, there aren't any big PlayStation games. Like PlayStation is done for 2021. There's Halo Infinite. Overall, I guess there's Kena Bridge of Spirits, but that's also on PS4. But yeah, for me, it's I don't know, 3, 5, 6 hours most nights. Like it depends.
You're
what's
able
out.
To just churn it out, really.
I can kind of just do it. I mean, it depends what's out. I think at the minute things are more relaxed, and because we're like I said, because we're coming out of lockdown right now, I'm spending more time doing outside things again, going swimming for the first time in like a year and a half, and just sort of enjoying that and going out for meals again and stuff like that. So things are in the way at the minute. If it's a full, like if there's a bunch of stuff to cover, then my average would be like 3 to 5, 6 hours. And I mean, I'm up until 2 a.m. or something like every night. That's me. I like living on games. I've banked like 10 hours in KOTOR in the last like 2 nights or something.
To be fair though, Scott is the sole reason why the games industry is still afloat, because the amount of titles that you buy and play is ridiculous. It's like, oh, have you played this? Yeah, I've got about 15 hours to it. I'm like, yep, sure. The pre-release trailer came out yesterday. Scott, have you met? I've got a guy. Just know a guy.
Just they sent me. They know who I am. Yeah. It arrives by pigeon. Yeah, I think I like to sort of check in on everything. Like every last, I mean, I was on the Windjammers 2 beta like last night. It's like as nice. Well as KOTOR and like I just finished Death.
It's such a good game, by the way.
Oh my god, Windjammers is the best one-on-one multiplayer game ever. Ever. And it's like Windjammers 2's beta is out, and it's really weird because it's not on the UK PlayStation store, but if you follow the Euro link and then it appears in French, I think is the language it defaults to on the web browser, and then log in with your PlayStation account and download it, it will then be in your library when you turn on the PlayStation, so you can go to the library and then download the English version.
Oh, mad.
So it's really weird, and because of that, the player count is tiny, but I have managed to do some games online. But Windjammers, a Frisbee-based one-on-one.
So good.
It's phenomenal. Play Windjammers. It's on every single system, and go play the beta, because for Windjammers too. But yeah, I tend to live on video games, unless there's movies to watch, TV or whatever, or life stuff to do, so I don't become a big blob. Otherwise, I'm just living on games. Next question from Haley from Camp Crystal Lake, who says, it's annoying that Sony isn't putting out PlayStation 5 exclusives, but Xbox also seems to be winning right now, despite doing the same because of their approach to backwards compatibility. Which approach would you prefer? More backwards compatibility or more separation between the generations?
I think that we addressed this sort of argument a couple of months ago, but I'm very much of the proponent, as much as it even pains me to say as a person who relishes old video game experiences, but I feel like you only move the industry forward when you actually start cutting ties and saying that we're not going to be limiting our hardware to play old games. We are moving forward. Like, there might even be a reason why we're holding on to a disc-based concept of consoles at the moment, because of the fact that they offer backwards compatibility.
Yeah, like that's why I got them.
The thought process that went into the PlayStation 3 was apparently so insanely intense, because not only were they making a console that could move things forward for Sony, but they made it so that it was backwards compatible for PlayStation 1 and PlayStation 2 games until they finally started going, right, we're going to have to start moving away from this.
But I always think that transition period is so valuable.
Yeah. As much like as nostalgia will bring in the bucks, at the end of the day, like, they can rework stuff to make it run on newer consoles if they wanted to. But to be honest, I personally believe that we should always be striving forward for the industry without... And that, unfortunately, is going to mean having to say goodbye to a few other things.
See, I'm totally for... I mean, that was the hilarious original Jim Ryan quote was, we believe in generations. And then they've only moved away from that and sort of tried to do more backwards compatibility stuff. But yeah, same. Like, if I'm spending £500 on something, I want it to do something that the previous system couldn't do. Yeah. And the more you bring stuff out cross-gen, the more disappointed I am. And so, like, just on a base consumer level, I'm buying into a vague promise of a next generation. And it's like... Yeah, so for me, I would prefer separation between the generations, but I don't think that should come at the expense of access points to those old games.
Yeah.
Like I'm having a blast playing KOTOR, and I had to play that on my Xbox because you can't get it on a PS4. Yep. There's no version of that game unless you want to do it on Android or something. So it's like, I think you should have access to legacy content, whether they do that as a paid service or you just have those archives online. I don't see any reason why you wouldn't. I don't know why someone like Sony aren't monetizing their PlayStation history. I think that's insane.
I totally agree with you. I know that Sony especially have got like a sort of real aversion to working with PC platforms because of the stranglehold that Microsoft has on that market. Mm. But you might as well just say to them, look, here are a ton of PlayStation 1 and PlayStation 2 classics up on Steam or GOG or something like that that caters for these things. And they take a huge amount of revenue. Therefore, you can always say to them, hey, guys, even though this PlayStation 7 is going to have like sniff sensors and stuff like that, if you don't want to have your Oculus burning like retina scan thing, then go and play the PlayStation 1 or 2 games that we put up on these websites. Yeah. And for those of you out there who are listening who are in a constant search for old school games, check out GOG, Good Old Games. They have tons of old PC games and obviously a lot of them back in the day. You get a lot of PC, PlayStation 1, and original Xbox crossover. So you can find quite a lot of good gems there.
Mm-hmm. That's my thing with them. I love the idea of an archive of old systems because it's not necessarily like you're going to go back and play through the entirety of like some old, a full 40 hours of Final Fantasy VIII or something. Mm-hmm. But like having it available is a good thing. And obviously in Final Fantasy's case, they are available, but there are tons of old school titles that you just can't play. And like you think of them on a random afternoon and you want to just play them for a bit and you can't. I think that's a problem. And I would pay for a monthly fee for access to the entire PlayStation library, or if they did it by PS1, PS2, PS3 or whatever. Mm-hmm. Even same on Xbox, they have a legacy of content that you could monetize. I think, but at the same time, like you said, you're not going to move forward with an industry, with a medium, with creativity and artistry if you don't start making exclusives that play to the strengths of the new hardware. That just seems
We've already seen a huge, what can happen when nostalgia is just relentlessly exploited with the end cycle of the last generation and the beginning of this new one. They are just farming out games that we've already played. We were talking just last week about the fact that The Last of Us is getting remade again. That game doesn't need a remake, but it's just people are just spinning the wheels while they wait for the new generation to fully kick in. It's just bad.
The beginning of the whole, when the new generation, the current generation was being talked about, Mark Cerny was up there doing the Sony hardcore deep dive thing, saying like, look, the way that we've made games is about to change because we're eliminating loading, so you don't even have to have corridors in between sections of combat or something like that. It fundamentally changes the way you make games if you eliminate loading. And that was like, oh my god, that is insane, and that's going to change everything. But then even Sony themselves have gone, but not really, not yet. We're going to do all these, this game's also on PS4, so we need to make sure that the environment works for that. So the likes of God of War is hampered by it and things like that. And so it's going to be another couple of years, but that promise of that real step up, eliminating loading and designing games around that, and what can you make in that regard? Like that stuff just makes me go, oh my god, that's incredible. Mm-hmm. But that's years away. So yeah, at some point, I guess, hopefully they'll embrace what the next generation can be.
Thanks for your question, by the way. That was a good question.
Yeah, thank you very much. Next question from Vin Van Meel, who says, ahoy lads, what game is in need of a demaster/demake? The way he's taken this is, which game is too complicated, but the core mechanics and features make for an amazing game? Assassin's Creed Valhalla was great, but now having finished it, I have 3 children that are flying cars, and the PlayStation 5 is still out of stock, coming to us from 2040, assumedly. But the way that I thought he was going to take that was that run of demasters where people make something like Bloodborne on PS1, or things like that. That's how I would take that, but I know what he means in terms of take the core and then make it like PS1, PS2 style.
So basically, it's like taking a video game and just removing all of the fat in it.
I was going to say, trimming the bloat off it, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that is a tough one. I mean, my mind immediately thinks back to, unfortunately, Cyberpunk, because it's a recent example, because of the fact that I feel like there was just too much on it to overtax the team, overstretch the development process.
God, I keep forgetting that game.
The thing is I load it back up occasionally and I just still think to myself, god damn, this game is very fun when it's running as it should be. And I'm just like, oh man, just an absolute sting in the tail for that one. Mm-hmm. So I would say that game there, if it had a bit of like fat cut out from it, and was allowed to breathe a little bit more with the smaller space and less taxing, I reckon people would have enjoyed it so much.
There's weirdly, my mind goes to, I don't know if you played much of the Yakuza series or Judgment, but like the...
No, I need to get into the Yakuza series.
Yeah, because it's one of my favorite franchises, but I love Judgment is their sort of attempt at doing like a more grounded, like serial killer murder mystery type thing, where you play as like a detective who's like hunting stuff instead of being one of the Yakuza, but you are also like an ex-Yakuza. But that game, especially towards the end when the story really kicks off, has so much fetch questy stuff where it's just like, go here, talk to this character. Right, now run back across the whole city and talk to that character. Right, now run back and do this.
Yeah.
And it's just like, oh my God, can you just streamline it a bit? And I don't know, like, which... I mean, I've been on the Yakuza train since the beginning, but I don't know who's asking for this sort of, like, weird story bloat. Because for me, like, the story side is one thing, and the city activities, they're a whole other thing. And so that would be... I would streamline that stuff. I would take out a lot of the weird open world bloat in regards to running around and just give me, here's the story and here's your mini games and it's in this location and just go indulge and just get stuck in this instead of running around for it. Just remove running from everything, I think is what I would say.
Well, I tell you what, I would just, as a mandatory thing that I wish would be removed from video games in general is just feeling that your game needs to have an open world element. Like, I know we discussed it before, but there are some games that just do not need it. The original No More Heroes is a fantastic boss beater. It's such a good like boss rush game because of all of the crazy stuff that you do, like who you fight and all the like setup and stuff that's there. I won't ruin anything for you. But one of the bits that is really grinding is the fact that it chucks you occasionally back into this big open world. And I remember them just like touting that this, like how big this open world was and how like how crazy it was to like zoom across from town to town on your giant like Akira styled motorbike. And yes, that is fun. But the problem is there is literally nothing to do in that world. Kind of like L.A. Noire. There was like nothing to do in it apart from the occasional like random crime that you had to stop.
Yeah, I would throw in PS5 as well.
Yeah, like turn that into a level system. Mm-hmm. I would much rather go from level to level and maybe have a hub map selection thing because it streamlines the content. It makes your experience more fun to play. And yes, like it's not as immersive in the sense that you're not going out into this living world. It doesn't need to be. Like you're selling yourself on different aspects and you can push them harder. Like that for me detracted from the overall experience.
No, totally. Like, I mean, I was thinking about, I was writing about Gears like yesterday and I was like, Gears 5, like really tight game, love the combat model, but like they injected this completely unnecessary open world bit where you are just on, you're on this like weird like sailboat thing that drives on sand. It's called like a skiv, I think. And you're just going like, but it just means that you're just scattering the game because it's like Arkham City. It's just sort of like, well, here's the meat of this game. And we shattered it, so now you need to travel from this point to this point to this point. Just give me it all in one go. Like I'm not getting anything from this travel time, and there's nothing to do on the way. So like, yeah, I guess I would regress those things. If it did another Arkham type, I mean, Gotham Knights seems like the next Arkham game that's going to be even more bloated, more open world, more multiplayer. It's like just go backwards.
The one superhero game that I felt nailed the sort of open world thing was the Spider-Man game for the PS1.
Yes.
I felt like there was always something to do. There was always something to explore. I was just happy just swinging because they made the traversal mechanics themselves that much more fun than just driving from point A to B. But I was just like, oh, I don't care that it's taken me about 20 minutes to get from one side of the island to the other. I had a blast doing it, completing challenges along the way.
Yeah, that's a really good point. If you're going to do like bloated traversal or a lot of traversal, do something other than just holding the stick forward. I think it's like, you know, because like you said in Spidey, it's like you're chaining those moves together. You're doing those different like two-handed web blasts and stuff like that.
Doing like the tricks and stuff like that when you're
system. Yeah, if you're going to, I think if you're going to do an open world thing and you're going to have your arbitrary open world stuff, at least gamify it a little bit. Give us something to do in it. Even in Jack 2, you had the skateboard. I was just thinking of skateboarding games for a sec there. I was like, Jack 2's little hoverboard. I used to love it. Next question from Dan, who says, hi, gents. Hope you're doing well. Well, same to you. Have either of you ever had any gaming / nerdy figures that were accidentally damaged or destroyed? I myself had the Sephiroth Kutabakaya SM AC figure. I tried to say Kutabakaya Advent Children figure because I've also had that too, that my cat pushed off a shelf. To say, rather upset. I have a Thanos figure that fell and his limbs all fell off and then they just won't go back on properly. He's sort of like, he can stand in one position, but if you kind of mold him a little bit, he just falls apart again. So he's just perpetually looking like he's afraid of everyone that's in front of him because he's like back over. But
I had to get rid of all of my figurines and stuff like that when I moved down because there's just not enough space for them down here. I did have to fix Rach's Dark Souls figurine that she got like a gaping dragon. figurine and like something broke off of it, so I had to go and fix it for her, and she was devastated. No, actually it wasn't that. It was Link's bow from one of her Legend of Zelda figurines that broke, and I had to go and fix it for her, and that was painstaking because it's like one of those things where it was such a fine break that you could see where, like, if it wasn't lined up perfectly, like, because the plastic was like gray. So I had to spend ages like tweaking it just ever so slightly to get it back into position again.
Because I love the figure life, but I mean that's the thing. He mentions a cat pushed it off a shelf. That is literally the reason why I don't have a cat right now. Like, me and my wife were about to zero in on getting a cat and just sort of scanned the room and was just like, there's a lot of stuff that this cat could destroy if we get a cat in. So that is the primary reason I don't want to smashing all my Witcher figures or anything. Final question from Robert Green. Has there been a game that ruined another game in the same genre for you? I know that Jules is a big Dynasty Warriors fan. I played the Kessen series and Dynasty Warriors was just not what I wanted. Test Drive Eve of Destruction also made it near impossible for me to enjoy Wrecked. Sorry, Scott. Well, you should be sorry, because Wrecked is brilliant, but I've not played Test Drive Eve of Destruction.
So basically you're saying that you're a Romance of the Three Kingdoms buff, are you? Kessen 2 is where it's at, my friend. Unfortunately, XCOM has completely ruined any squad-based, turn-based strategy games for me, because every single time that I see anyone trying to ape their system, I go, yeah, it's just not as good.
I would just play XCOM.
The thing is that the way that I always think of XCOM is that it's the Pong of its own genre. It's simplified everything down to basically what you need to work. And it is 100% the purest video game experience of that one particular thing that it's trying to do. And so therefore, whenever I see somebody else trust me, there have been so many good games that have tried to build on top of that I just go, no, you don't need to build on top of perfection. That's like trying to stick a funny hat onto one of the characters of Mount Rushmore. It's cool and all, but it's not needed.
No, I mean the nearest something got, I was trying to think of like other turn-based games that I've liked recently. There was a one called Mutant Year Zero that brought in like a stealth system.
That's kind of cool. Yeah.
But still, like you said, it's like XCOM does perfect it. For me, it's Dark Souls. Like, I think that whatever anyone's first Souls game is tends to stick with them anyway. But once you've ingratiated yourself into that mentality of like turtle rolling around someone, turtle poking around someone, like, you know, you're circle strafing around someone and progressing through a game in that way, then nothing, all you ever see is Souls. And so like that dominated the entire, all the 2010s, obviously after Dark Souls came out in 2011, everything was just a Souls clone and I couldn't get away from it.
What about that Mortal Shell thing?
Oh my God, Mortal Shell is like, that's the only unique thing in that is that you can hold a button to tank hits. So, which it is like, it's
you're
weird
piss
because
off a lot of that community.
Like my point is that I'm kind of fascinated by it. It's weird because you have to steer into combat in a way that you don't in Souls, and you have to rely on absorbing the hit as you go to hit someone. And that's a really weird thing to train your brain to do. So I really admired that. But after a while, I was just like, it's just from every single part of it is reminding me of Souls, and I would rather replay Dark Souls. So I ended up bouncing off it. But no, that's a game where it's so nakedly Dark Souls, but they did have a cool little mechanic that is, for me, they didn't do enough with it, or at least not in the early game anyway. But yeah, for now, this has been the Untitled Banter podcast. Thanks to everybody for sending in their questions. Please do the same next week. We'll put out another tweet Thursday afternoon UK time. It'll be me or Jules will send something out and we'll gather up as many questions as we can. I might also carry across a few from this week's gathering because we did get a lot of submissions. But yes.
Well, if they don't follow us already though, Scott, where can they find you?
They can find us on Twitter. I'm at /LP89. Jules, what are you?
I'm at RetroJ with A0.
And thanks to you all again. Thank you very much. We will catch you all next week.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices.
Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.